I just got back from a trip to Malta to see Professor Filippo Biondi and the rest of the CAFRA Pyramid Project team, the group behind the controversial and potentially world-changing findings that suggest a multi-kilometer subterranean city-scale infrastructure exists almost 1,000 meters below the surface of the Giza Plateau in Egypt. Now, although I can't talk about the specifics of our meeting, I came away from this time with the CAFRA Pyramid team feeling incredibly optimistic about the possibility of physical investigations in situ on the Giza Plateau in the near future. It's quite a difficult country to navigate with the Department of Antiquities in Egypt. It's extremely tight on their allowance of excavations. However, opinions and attitudes in the country are changing, as are the dynamics of authority and leadership in respects to sites like Giza. And so this was an opportunity for me to be briefed on the next stages of their mission to reveal what is beneath the sands of the Giza Plateau. But Malta itself is an incredible place, crisscrossed by nations, trade routes, empires, and invaders stretching all the way back into prehistory. Malta as a country has the largest concentration of megalithic sites in the world. Multi-ton temple structures, monuments, and subterranean spaces that are carved and shaped directly out of the bedrock. The true builders are entirely unknown, because when the Bronze Age settlers from neighboring areas such as Sicily in Italy first arrived on the shores of Malta, they arrived to find an island that was devoid of human life, and yet pockmarked with incredible temple structures and sacred sites, the evidence of an advanced human culture, now lost to time. However, their fingerprints still remain. The evidence of their existence carved into stone, the evidence of their intelligence represented in the incredible engineering, mathematical, and cosmic knowledge on display, aligning their structures to the solstice, to the equinox, tuning themselves into a deeper layer of nature. And the truly amazing thing about Malta is just how much of this deep history, this prehistoric cultural evidence, is left to become overgrown and forgotten. Yes, you have key sites, which are tourist attractions, like the prehistoric sites of Haltagirn or Hagakim, or even, of course, the Hypogeum. But it's when you simply walk off into the countryside that you find yourself stumbling upon one example after another of primarily subterranean structures and spaces that have been carved out with meticulous attention to detail, but have since been aged and heavily eroded by time and the lack of protection from the elements. As I said, many of these places are basically invisible. Hit that subscribe button. Please just whack that subscribe button with your finger right now. That's the best way to support me. Drop a comment below in the comment section, like the video, share the video online. But above all else, hit that subscribe button. Make sure you tickle that notification bell as well, otherwise YouTube doesn't send you the videos. You have to go off into the fields and overgrown areas to find these glimpses of deep history. My local friend in the area took us to a variety of places that don't have names. They're not being actively documented or excavated. They're simply forgotten. And yet they show evidence of an organized civilization that was doing large-scale bedrock excavation work at a time before the wheel, before any metal tools, during the deep Neolithic, the Stone Age era, as we call it. This area in particular showed evidence of a greater level of infrastructure below. It's very similar to what we see at the Hypogeum, one of Malta's most famous sites and arguably one of the most impressive subterranean structures from prehistoric times in the world, due to its incredible overlapping geometry and the demonstrable, studied, provenly deliberate acoustic engineering geared towards 110 hertz, which impacts the consciousness of a human being through shifting brainwave state function towards more hypnagogic, dreamlike, or expanded states of consciousness. This site in the middle of nowhere bears similar hallmarks, but we're only seeing a slice of what could be beneath. The chances of this site being more of an entrance into something larger and deeper are extremely high, because subterranean features from prehistory can be found literally everywhere in Malta.
Looks, I don't know. something can be used for collect water, maybe?
Yeah. Storage.
Wow. Just hidden away.
Garage.
It goes further down, but it's collapsed in and that's crazy, isn't it? Just tucked away like that. But you got niches carved in up here.
Pretty much perfect squares taken out there.
Yeah, that's, I mean, look at that.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And then like up here you just got the same. Niches have been carved in everywhere you go. Very strange. I feel like there's more to this than just storage, just because of all these strange little niches.
Yeah, you can imagine things on there, can't you?
And this is very impressive.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, come down.
You can go inside.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, this is ancient. Yo, that almost looks like a screaming face, especially on my camera.
Oh, what?
That's creepy.
Yeah, isn't it? Also, like, separate little rooms. Built.
Yeah. Not a bad spot to live in, really, I guess.
If you can... it's all right. You're going to find some heat and some dryness when you eat it.
Wow.
The first level of a structure like an apogee.
That's what I was thinking as well. I was thinking the same thing.
Here is another example in the middle of a field, obscured by some bushes and tall grass. Nobody would even give this area a second glance if they were just walking by or driving past. But once you get closer, you realize it's actually a series of carved out chambers directly into the bedrock. The reason for it is unknown, and again, it has no name, no documentation, no further excavation. Another potential entry point to additional subterranean infrastructure that has yet to be explored.
Oh, wow.
So you can easily go inside.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
It's kind of like volcanic.
Yeah.
Volcanic rock.
Yeah. Oh, wow, yeah. Oh, dude, yeah. Look at this. Wow.
Yeah.
See, this is the thing with Malta. There's so many of these just dotted around, like subterranean dugout parts of the limestone.
I thought that might be like some form of chimney stack or something.
Imagine like this, right? It's like the hypogeum is just like perfect geometry. Perfect geometry, all overlapping.
and this, but like deep and so many different tunnel systems.
Yeah.
But this is just like, you know, all over the place, right?
Yeah. That's so cool.
How old do you think this is?
I have no idea.
If you had to guess, you think it's older than like the Romans or like?
Yeah. It's a similar structure like the Hypogeum, you know.
See.
Yes.
Very similar to the Hypogeum.
Also, like catacombs in Ravana.
Yeah, see.
Yeah, fascinating.
Just tucked away in the middle of the
nothing.
Middle of nothing. Yeah, middle of nowhere.
It's strange because look at this area.
Yeah. I know. Very purposefully carved out, and I wonder if it goes deeper and it's maybe filled in. Maybe it goes deeper down. Very cool.
I don't know if it's burials or something.
Yeah. Well, they could be burial chambers.
I don't think. No.
Well, like you think, like temples,
yeah. It's not like a temple. It looks like a place where something lived there. The mainstream story is this is catacombs.
Yeah.
It don't look like.
My friend is quite well connected on the island of Malta, and Malta itself is a hotbed of secret societies and global power dynamics playing out on this small Mediterranean island. The Knights of Malta, the Templars, the Freemasons, Vatican emissaries, all congregate on this ancient island, exerting influence in various ways. And my friend believes that these hypogeum-type chambers, these subterranean areas, well, he calls them nests. He believes something lived in these chambers, in the underground spaces, and he's not alone. In fact, the original excavations of the Hypogeum brought with them a terrifying possibility that was very much being entertained by the original excavation team. That this wasn't a burial chamber for the ancestors of this island. It was a feeding pit. The Hypogeum was not formally reported upon in its discovery in 1902. Workers cutting cisterns for a housing development broke through the roof of the structure, and critically, the discovery was actively concealed for at least a year or so as to not disrupt the building work being done above it. By the time it was officially disclosed and excavators arrived, significant and irreversible damage had been done to the upper level. Whatever was present at the entrance, the megalithic superstructure that once marked the entrance to the subterranean complex, this had already been destroyed, unfortunately. The first excavator was a Jesuit father, Emmanuel Magri, working on the site from 1903 to 1907, and then died suddenly in Tunisia. His notes were never found. Every record of Magri's excavation, what he saw, what he documented, what conclusions he was beginning to form, vanished with him. This remains one of the most consequential information gaps in Maltese prehistoric archaeology. The subsequent excavator, Sir Temi Zamit, took over in 1907 and worked until 1911. His published reports form the primary evidentiary foundation for everything that follows. What those reports describe diverge in critical ways from the neat burial chamber narrative that has since been institutionally promoted. It seems to be the label given to anything we can't truly explain from deep history. It's a tomb, it's a tomb, it's a ritual object, it's a tomb. But there are some good reasons to doubt that. The most fundamental and frequently overlooked anomaly in the Hypogeum is the character of the human remains that were found inside. Now, the official description says 7,000 individuals were buried in a collective necropolis, which implies intentional, respectful internment. The actual excavation record tells a radically different story. Zamit himself wrote explicitly, and I quote, "Human bones were found in great numbers, but not one skeleton could be made out to have been whole and regularly laid out for burial." His colleague, R.N. Bradley, excavating the area adjacent to the original entrance between September 1910 and February 1911, confirmed with the following: "No complete skeletons came to light, and the bones lay in confusion through the soil, as in the rest of the Hypogeum. Not one body had been laid to rest in any recognizable funerary arrangement." The 1908-09 annual report of the Maltese Museum is unambiguous. It says, "The impression one gets from the distribution of the bones is that they were thrown in a haphazard way. More than 120 individual skeletons were identified in a single measured space of 3.17 by 1.2 by 1 meters. Very small, tightly packed space filled with skeletons. Bradley's excavation reports record directly that animal bones were found mingled with human. This co-mingling of human and animal remains in the same deposit is again inconsistent with deliberate reverential burial practice. One of the most striking observations in Bradley's report is almost never discussed. Unrelated bones and also implements were found in the interior of skulls. Stone tools placed inside disarticulated skulls alongside vertebrae without their spinous processes, suggesting either extreme violence, post-mortem manipulation, or both. Again, none of which is consistent with routine, respectful, reverential burial practices. Zamit noted that pottery shards from different caves within the Hypogeum matched each other, meaning that the material had been moved around after initially being placed somewhere, which is consistent with some form of water action or mechanical disturbance. The bones were thoroughly mixed into a homogeneous red earth matrix that was averaging about 1 meter in depth throughout nearly all passages and chambers, which is consistent with mass dumping or even a form of unexpected flooding of this system. The 7,000 individuals figure, which is widely cited as established fact, is itself a rough extrapolation. Zamit calculated it by counting a certain amount of bones and then essentially multiplying by the total cave volume. So another excavator who was working under Zamit's supervision, W.A. Griffiths, actually put the figure at 33,000. So the actual number is unknowable because the majority of bones disintegrated upon contact due to the extreme dampness and the age of the bones. What remains archaeologically certain is that an extraordinary density of disarticulated, meaning ripped apart, human remains were found in a space that was architecturally unsuited for individual burial. Among the 7,000 individuals whose remains were scattered through the Hypogeum, a series of skulls were recovered in sufficient condition for study. Zamit described them as being of the long-headed type. Two of the skulls in particular were described by researchers at the time as possessing anomalies that went beyond natural Mediterranean skeletal physiology. For example, the sagittal suture, critical to skull development that runs along the top of the skull of all humans, is missing entirely in at least one specimen, which is still publicly viewable at the Museum of Archaeology in Malta's capital city of Valletta, which is where you're seeing this video footage from when I was in the museum. Now, this is where we get into the really strange elements of the history surrounding the Hypogeum. In the mid-1930s, a British embassy worker named Louise Jessop visited the Hypogeum with a guide named Joe. Her account, published in the Journal of Borderland Research, Volume 17, Number 2, and later reprinted in Enigma Fantastique, describes penetrating past the official tour into an unauthorized passage on the lowest level of the Hypogeum. Upon emerging from the narrow passage onto a ledge above a deep chasm, Jessop writes that she witnessed approximately 20 giant humanoid figures walking in single file along a ledge some 50 feet below her. She estimated their height at 20 to 25 feet. They turned toward her and raised their arms in a beckoning gesture. Moments later, her candle was extinguished by a gust of wind, and she encountered something soft and wet on the wall of the passage before retreating in panic. She said that the guide, Joe, gave her a look she interpreted as acknowledging recognition. He had apparently seen whatever she had seen before. When Jessop returned shortly afterward, the passage had been boarded up, and a new guide denied that anyone named Joe had ever worked there. The Hypogeum does not exist in isolation. Malta is riddled with an extensive network of underground passages, many of which have no documented history. Local tradition holds that at one point in the island's history, one could walk underground from one end of Malta to the other. The British government is recorded as having permanently sealed many of these tunnel entrances, not just the Hypogeum passage. Here in a random car park in the capital city of Valletta, we come across a scene strikingly similar to what we see on the Giza Plateau. One entrance after another, cut into the limestone bedrock, sealed up with bricks and gates. All the way down this road, we see one example after another of sealed up entrances, one of which we were able to get our camera through, and you can see it goes straight down. So are these some of the tunnel entrances sealed up by the British government? And if so, why? The Knights of Malta, when they constructed Valletta in the 16th century, built over what researchers note was pre-existing carved bedrock. The rock-cut architecture is far more weathered than the structures built above it, suggesting the underground spaces long predated the Knights' constructions. And some researchers have proposed that the Knights were aware of and perhaps deliberately built over the pre-existing underground infrastructure. The civilization that built the Hypogeum and the Maltese temples above ground, one of the most sophisticated Neolithic cultures in the world, vanished around 2500 BC. They left no written record, no evidence of invasion, no epidemic, no identified cause. Within a remarkably short archaeological time frame, a culture capable of carving 500 square meters of precision-engineered underground space during our apparent Stone Age simply ceased to exist. What replaced them was different. Bronze Age people who cremated their dead and interred their ashes among the ruins of the temples. The continuity was broken. Whatever the Hypogeum was for, and whatever relationship the temple builders had with it, it died with them. Another anomaly from history that Malta is famous for are these deep linear cuts into the bedrock that have been dubbed as cart ruts. The implication being that these were track lines for carts to follow during quarrying. But we have to remember that we're talking about a prehistoric Neolithic Stone Age people. They didn't have the wheel, to our knowledge. So what exactly are these cuts through the bedrock? They crisscross each other throughout the landscape. And most interesting of all, they even follow down across the land towards the sea and continue on beneath the seabed. Suggesting what exactly? That the ancient people scuba dived down to the ocean floor and began cutting the rock? Or that this area was once much larger and has since experienced catastrophic flooding and geological trauma? This seems far more likely, and it causes me to wonder just how much more of ancient Malta is strewn across the surrounding seafloor. Where do these cart ruts that enter the ocean lead? I plan to return to Malta at some point with my friend Michael Donnellan to actually do some diving around the island, because I've no doubt we will find further evidence of civilization beneath the water. And so the Khafre Pyramid team are keeping their eye on Malta and other sites around the world, but Egypt is far from over. This is a multifaceted endeavor to gain higher fidelity imagery and understanding. It's going to take time to chip away at this, and especially because in Egypt, it can be difficult, especially when you're offering a different narrative, especially when that narrative completely dismantles what we understand, not just about ancient Egypt, but ancient humanity as a whole. I consider Professor Filippo to be a professional, an academic, but also a good human being. We've become great friends over this last year or so, and I trust him. I know he isn't trying to fool anyone or sell a flimsy idea. He believes in this, and his radar background with the Italian government should be taken seriously. I also know that he has a far deeper side to him, and I respect him for that. He straddles both the academic and the esoteric world in his mind, and I have a special type of appreciation for intellectuals who are able to see beyond the materialistic, the reductionist worldview. And he very much does. I have so much footage to show you of Malta, the various prehistoric temples and sites. I've been there multiple times now, and each time I've been documenting more and more, because I'm going to be doing a larger production for my ancient technology series, which will be centered on Malta and its neighboring island of Gozo. I also have another episode to put out from Peru. And I also recently did a road trip to Yorkshire, England, with my good friend and fellow researcher Jean-Luc to document some of the lesser known but absolutely mind-blowing monolithic structures from prehistoric England. And I have a UFO-related presentation I'm working on right now, which I consider to be very important. I know I haven't done a whole lot of UFO coverage, over the last few months and, well, pretty much for the last year. I've done a few little bits and pieces, but for the most part, I have been focusing on ancient history. But I would like to do a presentation, a lecture on the UFO subject, because I think it is a very important subject. And I think that the way it's being handled right now is something that we need to be discussing. So yeah, lots of irons in the fire right now, lots of interesting videos to come. Don't forget to like, don't forget to share and comment, and most importantly, please don't forget to subscribe to support Project Unity.